shared different perspectives and encounters that Jesus had with his followers after his resurrection. And this is one of the unique ones, certainly. Perhaps one of the most beloved in many ways, as it takes place on the shore of the lake. It tells us this. Now, after these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. Also, known as the Sea of Galilee. And he showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said to them, "I'm going fishing." Well, they said, "And we will go with you." They went out and got into the boat. But that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach. But the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. And Jesus said to them, "Oh, children, you have no fish, have you?" I'm sure any great fisher person loves that comment. "No fish, eh?" They answered him, "No." So he said to them, "Well, cast the net to the right side of the boat, and you'll find some." So they cast it. And now they were not able to haul it in because there were so many fish. Now that disciple whom Jesus loved, as if Jesus didn't love all the disciples, but we think this is John who's writing the gospel. He gets to have a little favor to note every once in a while. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." And when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and he jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they were not far from land, only about 100 yards off. And when they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there with fish on it. Bread. And Jesus said to them, "Oh, bring some of the fish you've just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them, and though there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared to ask him, "Who are you?" Because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread. And he gave it to them. And he did the same with the fish. This is now the third time Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they'd finished breakfast, said, no, no, no. But of course, the reality is every one of the disciples did something like that during Jesus' crucifixion. They all ran. They all betrayed him. They all went the wrong way, away from Jesus rather than toward him. Peter, of course, is highlighted and here faced directly by Jesus. But I think every one of the disciples is faced with Jesus in this breakfast on the beach moment. Because they were going the wrong way. Jesus had already appeared to them a few times, but isn't it interesting that they find themselves now back up in the north, in Galilee, back in kind of the hometown, their headquartered area where they began with Jesus, but they've gone fishing. Now, fishing in and of itself is not a bad thing. How many people are like to fish out there? That's not the problem, of course. The problem is that they used to be, some of them, fishermen. That was their old way of life. And Jesus had called them to something new. And for some reason now, they find themselves going back to it. Sort of the old ways. The old them, if you will. They're going the wrong way. Whenever I read this particular passage, I think of a football player. I think I've mentioned him before. His name was Roy Riegels. Have I talked about him before? I forget who I share these stories with sometimes. Roy played in 1929. So this is back in the glory days of college football. Before there was professional football. When you just played for the love of the game. And when you had a leather helmet, right? And almost no padding. 1929. Roy Riegels, here he is. He played for the University of California at Berkeley, and it's the Rose Bowl, January 1, 1929. They're playing Georgia Tech. Roy is one of the stars of the team. He's their center and a linebacker. He played both offense and defense, as many men did in those days. And it's somewhere in the midst of the second quarter. Georgia Tech has the ball. Their running back is making his way around on a sweep. He's gaining some yardage. And as he's tackled, the ball is fumbled and is bouncing around. And Roy, as a linebacker, is able to scoop up the ball. But in the ensuing melee, as he grabs the ball and he's trying to evade tackles and such, he sort of spins off and bounces around, and he starts to run as he sees the goalpost, and he runs as hard as he can. But what he doesn't realize is he's running toward the wrong goalpost. In this picture, this is Roy running with the ball, being chased most closely by his own teammates. And in fact, one of his best friends, is able to stop him at the 1 yard line. Tries to turn him back and start to run back the other way before the Georgia Tech team catches up and they just tumble in a heap on the one. Well, you can imagine, this was not exactly Roy's idea of an amazing football play. And the Cal had a few plays there at the one. They didn't advance it, so they tried to punt out of the end zone. It was blocked. Georgia Tech got a safety. Halftime comes up. Everybody shuffles in to the locker room. Roy tries to find a spot somewhere as far back in the locker room as he can to sit down, pull a towel over his head, and hang his head in shame. As you can imagine, he may have just cost his team the game. us who maybe along the way in our lives have had some major wrong way moves. Maybe ways that we've damaged relationships, betrayed friends, maybe even felt like we've wronged God so mightily. We're not sure God would ever want us back on the team. That's why I think of this story and wrong way Regals, as he was called ever after. Because every one of us has those different moments where we have fouled up. We have made a huge error, and it has cost us. And it might, we think, be enough to just have us sit out the rest of the game. Say, Lord, I'm not worthy. I can't do anything right for you. You've seen how I fouled this up before. You couldn't possibly want me back on the team. But here's Jesus, side of the lake, calling to every one of his disciples who have run the wrong way, and said, guys, it's only the first half. I need you out there for the second. Wrong way, Regals. He eventually ended up in the Rose Bowl Hall of Fame. Was actually a great football player. Became the captain of the team his senior year, the next year. He understood that one big mistake didn't need to define him. Peter got it too, of course. That one mistake didn't need to define him. The disciples, all of them, the starting team, got invited back to that breakfast on the beach. Like, they understood. They've been reinstated. They've been promoted back to the starting team. There was still another half to play. This morning, as a part of communion, going to be there to renew your baptism. And what is that about, really? Well, if we think about it, baptism is this sign of God's love for us, this vow that God will be with us, even in the midst of who we are, for all the wrong ways we run, that God will be loyal to us in a way. In fact, the word sacraments in the ancient Roman world, one of the ways it was used was for soldiers when they made a vow of allegiance and obedience to Caesar. So the Christian church used that as started to talk about the holiest of moments, communion and baptism, and to say, these are vows of allegiance that God makes to you and me. And that invites us then to make that same sort of vow to God. And of course, when many of us might have been baptized as little ones, we weren't ready to make that vow, to make that promise, say, yes, Lord, I will walk with you. I will follow after you. I will be a disciple, a student of you. But our parents said that. Maybe our grandparents said that. Today, as we come for communion and we give the sign of the cross and the waters of baptism on you, we renew in you that baptism vow, not only God's loyalty for you, but it's an invitation for you to renew that promise to God. Say, Lord, yes, I have run the wrong way sometimes, but I want to renew my commitment to you this day as a disciple. Mentioned a conference I was at this week. One of the speakers there was a man named Mark Laverton. He's the president now of Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena. He's a Presbyterian pastor, a man I've known for many years. Very wise, very thoughtful. His key question that he wrestled with and shared with us was, will the church of the 21st century fair bit of homelessness, folks living on the streets. And as you might imagine, there are many of folks coming to church who, depending on where they would park, how they would get to church, would of course encounter many of the folks on the streets. Well, one particular woman, Mark tells the tale, was from San Francisco, actually. She would drive over every Sunday, and she would get to church very early, like half an hour early, to get her seat. And eventually, it just dawned on him that she was there so early every week, he had to ask. So he goes, he says, "Oh, you know, I see you get here early. Tell me more about that. Why is that?" She said, "Well, you know, I come over from San Francisco. I love your preaching. But I want to make sure that I can park close so that I don't have to walk by those people." He thought, interesting. Okay. It was some months later that particular socialite, I assume, was listening more and more to what Mark was preaching about justice and righteousness, about the ways of Jesus reaching to the marginalized and the missed, and she sort of had a light bulb moment and said, "Well, maybe I should do something about that." So her first inclination was, she got some gift cards for McDonald's and such, and she still drove in early, but she parked now on Telegraph Avenue, and then would walk on her way to church. And as she saw people who she thought might be in need, she would sort of slyly drop a gift card on the ground, the sidewalk, as she walked by, just sort of toss them out, doing her duty as she felt. She continued to do this for a while, and then it sort of dawned upon her. She said, "Well, maybe that's not enough." And so then she started to bring not just gift cards, but she had some cash, and she would walk, and again, she'd see different people in need, and she would sort of drop things, sort of unassumingly, hoping really to not get too entangled in all this. Well, at one point, she saw this one particular man who looked very down and out, and she decided, "Well, I've got this $10 bill in my hand," and she just sort of dropped that closest to him. She walked by, kept moving, and then she heard something behind her. She wasn't quite sure what was happening. And as she turned back to see, what she discovered was this big bear of a homeless man was standing there, and he grabbed her and hugged her. The biggest bear hug she'd ever experienced in her life. And wasn't sure how to take it, so she's sort of taking the hug. And after a little while, she said, "Are we done?" He let her go. He said, "Thank you." And she scurried off, scared and confused, like, I don't know what just happened. She got to church, was going to sit down, and then realized, I don't even know his name. So she went back, searched for him on Telegraph Avenue, found him having a breakfast with the money she'd given him, and so she went in sort of sheepishly, and she said, I'm sorry to bother you, but can I just know your name?" He happily shared it, and he asked hers, and she shared hers, and they got into a little conversation. She began to realize, maybe there's more to this that Jesus is calling me to. And then over time, in the next months, she stopped dropping gift cards and stopped leaving cash, and instead she just started stopping and talking and getting to meet some of the people on the streets and talking, hearing their stories and understanding who they were and sharing their names, and her sharing with them too. And in fact, Mark would say, over time, she became essentially a chaplain to the people on the streets. That's the kind of church that will matter in the 21st century. A socialite from San Francisco who becomes a homeless chaplain